వెల్కమ్ బ్యాక్ టు ది థర్డ్ ఎపిసోడ్ ఆఫ్ మార్కో టాక్స్ ది మైండ్ అంటర్ విత్ డాక్టర్ ప్రశాంత్ కోచర్లకోట.
సార్, టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ క్రిమినల్ సైకాలజీ, వి వుడ్ లైక్ టు షెడ్ సమ్ లైట్ ఆన్ ది లాంగ్ అండ్ టీడియస్ జ్యుడిషియల్ ప్రాసెసెస్ ఆర్ లైక్ ది మోడ్ ఆఫ్ కన్విక్షన్, ఎస్పెషలీ ఇన్ ది కేసెస్ ఆఫ్ రేప్ ఆర్ మర్డర్ ఆర్ ఎనీ అదర్ అసాల్ట్. యాజ్ వి ఆల్ నో, ది డిఫెన్స్ ట్రైస్ ఇట్స్ వెరీ బెస్ట్ టు డిలే ది జస్టిస్ అండ్ ఈవెన్ సక్సీడ్ ఇన్ డూయింగ్ సో. For example, we can take the Nirbhaya case, which took like almost 7 years for the justice to be delivered. So we would like to know, what is the psychology of the victims or the psychology of the accused in this whole ordeal of a long trial?
Let's understand what a criminal defense, right? Criminal psychology. What is the purpose of a trial?
The purpose of a trial would be to deliver justice for a particular crime which has been done. Or we can say to provide justice to a victim of a crime.
The purpose of a trial, which also is to find out where truth lies, right? So let's say if I was caught and I was brought into a before a magistrate or a high court judge, I myself will hire the best lawyers that I can. Okay, my job in criminal defense, they say the most, I'm speaking from a psychological sense, okay. In criminal defense, every defendant has their right to the best defense possible. If you're a criminal defense attorney, your job is not to decide whether he's guilty or not and then throw him off if he's guilty. Your job is, if he's guilty, whether he's guilty or innocent, give him the best defense you can. What are they doing on the other side? The prosecution, they are also preparing. They are not saying, okay, whatever he does, we'll give him the case. So what I'm trying to say is this. The mindset of the defense is this. This is what most people believe. Let's say that one of you has committed a crime. In about 5 minutes, if I praise you and say, no, but you know, I know you hit that car. You didn't leave a note on the window, on the wipers, that I hit your car. Your complete back bumper is smashed. I'm sorry. Instead of that, you just took off because you're also drunk when you're driving. Okay. So I say, Arey bhai, you've just finished your exams. You're exhausted. Look, that was going to happen. And how do you know? And I'll say some karmic debt is there that you are supposed to hit that car. I can convince you. Soon you start feeling quite good. Yeah. There's some karmic defense. In fact, I helped that guy by hitting his car. I should go back and hit him one more time also. I should hit the driver also. The criminal mind, we're always thinking that the criminal mind is very different than ours, right? We always think we're doctors, we're this, we're students, we work very hard. We are not criminals. What is the difference between us and the criminal mind? Two very simple things. One, they commit a crime. The committing of a crime is sometimes bad luck. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time, okay? The second part is the big thing. They got caught. You remember earlier on I said every single one of us has done something we should not have done. It could be breaking a friendship, breaking a relationship. It could be telling a lie. It could be blaming someone who was actually innocent. It could be copying on a paper. It could be having a couple of drinks and then driving very fast. It could be anything. Every single person is guilty of one thing. Why don't we keep that in our mind, what we did? Because we didn't get caught. If you had gotten caught, you'll be thinking about again and again and again that you had to go to court, your father or mother had to get a criminal defense attorney. So understand, the criminal is thinking, how did I get caught? I've been doing this for such a long time. And he's thinking, and he or she, I should say she also, they're thinking, if I can get out of this problem, I'll never do it again. There's a 99.9% chance they're going to do it again. It's called repeat offenders. That is why they did it in the first time. They do it in the second. Now, I liked your question for one beautiful reason. You said, what is the victim's mindset? The victim's original mindset is one thing. Later on, after speaking to maybe psychologists or their advocates and their family, it becomes something very different. In the beginning, the victim starts feeling that what happened? They're in denial. They can't believe it's happened. They just don't know what is their role. Who did it? How could another human being on this earth, perpetrate such a crime, violence, rape, whatever he did to me, how could they do that to me? I'm another human being. I never hated people. I never did anything bad. Then we start doing the balance of justice. I didn't cheat anybody. I was very good to my parents. I was a good student. Okay, when I was in third class, I took 10 rupees from my father's wallet. They start trying to justify why did it happen to me. If you meet a cancer patient, they've just been diagnosed with cancer. What do they do? What did I do? In 10th class, I did this. When I was 5 years old, I did this. What did I do wrong that I got here? That I was diagnosed with cancer. Same thing. So the mentality of the victim is, why did I do this? Immediately after a few days, the society will tell them, well, you wore this. You should not have been in a certain place or time. Okay. Eventually, because of that, they go numb. They become numb. They just say, do what you want. But they are in a state, and that's why I like this question. It's called post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay. I had a gentleman many years ago, he's a Sardarji. He was a senior military officer. He was in his 60s after retirement. He came to my office. He's a friend of mine now, so he will not mind if I share this. He came and sat in my office at my hospital, and I kept asking questions. So, how can I help you? What's wrong? We have time. We have 1 hour. Tell me what's wrong. He said, no, nothing. I'm a military officer, very, very strong looking. Imagine how he looked. Okay, daddy, sir. And suddenly outside in the waiting room, the ward boy dropped a steel plate full of tea cups. It fell on the ground from about 4 feet. It made such a loud noise. This person jumped. He was shaking. Then I asked him, did you get shot? He was in the line of control. Were you shot? He said, yes, I was. I said, that's why you're waiting. That it could be an auto rickshaw, it could be a car, it could be a loud sound. How long have you retired? He said, 9 years, 10 years. Now I don't leave my daughters. I used to originally not leave the road where we lived. Then I stopped leaving, I only walk in the building. Then I only started walking on the floor where my daughter lives. Then I started walking only in the flat. Now I don't come out of my bedroom, he said. I was a man who carried a rifle who could shoot at 100 yards. Now I'm terrified if the TV sound, my granddaughter watches cartoons. If the sound is too much, I start shivering, he said. What happened to this person? He's a victim. Eventually, his own fear paralyzed him. It took him a long time. So what happens with the perpetrator, the criminal, is that they don't think of themselves very often as saying, okay, I did this, I did that wrong. They say, hey, when I was a boy, you know, my father used to drink, my mother never took care of us, I had to, you know, my father, we had so many children to feed, this lady who was, you know, walking with a gold necklace, why should she have it when I don't have it? Okay, he has a very strange pathological philosophy that he develops. But the philosophy that you develop in life is there only to serve you. The young girl or the young man who is the victim, he will develop a philosophy of themselves also. The philosophy is based on, why did it happen to me? And soon they can't go out. They develop post-traumatic stress, depression, severe anxiety. They can't go out because now they know, I was safe. Look, as you said, you took the case of Nirbhaya, must have thought that I was with a friend, I was in Delhi, I was doing nothing wrong, I was wearing normal clothes. It's not safe for me to walk on the roads. I can't do what normal other people do. I can't take subway, I can't take buses, I can't take autos. I better just stay at home. If she had survived. This is what happens with the victim. This is what happens with the criminal. They form a philosophy which will explain to them. And usually that philosophy is quite wrong. They will form a philosophy or an explanation which will explain why they got. Suppose one of you got pickpocketed last night, okay? And I say, are you okay? What happened? You got pickpocketed, are you okay? I say, no, I think, you know, I don't know. When I was in 12th class, my uncle gave me 5,000 rupees as a gift. I gave it to my friend, that fellow drank it off. He bought whiskey and he drank it off. I think that's why I lost that 6,000 rupees from my wallet. You'll develop a philosophy so you can accept it. It's about denial. And this is where doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists have to bring the person back into reality. So the question you have to ask yourself, how much are we in reality? How much, not are, how many of us are reality, not that. How much am I in reality? How much am I dealing with reality? What kind of lenses do I wear so I distort reality so that I can live in it, so I can play and live and everything else? If I take off my lenses, I may not want a maid to come and clean my house. Suddenly I see her as my daughter or my little sister. So if we take off our lenses, which make reality completely clear to us, what will happen? What changes will happen to us? Okay. Great question.
Yes, sir. Just so when we are on this topic, I'd like to know a few things. Because lots has changed in the recent times with the advent of technology and everything. Reinforcing information, the rate we gather it these days was not the same even 40 years back. There's no such thing as a full-fledged social media or the full-fledged internet. They used to rely on simpler things such as telegram, television, newspapers, radio, etc. Gathering information, understanding people who live outside of their bubble used to take a lot of time. These days, social media makes it happen super fast and simple. Do you think all this overload of information is good for the human brain? Is the human brain ready to gather it, able to process it? And even if it can process it, do you think will it be able to perform as efficiently out of the information it just gathered?
Okay, there's two parts to this. The first part is this, we created it. We created it for our own use. Okay. So to say whether our brain can handle it or not, that's a great, lovely question. This is the biggest question actually now, right? In 2020, this is the biggest question. You have certain social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, you've got pornography, you've got Google, but yeah, you've got everything. Some people talk, now that's not enough for them. They want dark web also. Is it true I can hire an assassin in dark web? Bhai, write your exams first, don't write about, no. The point is this, throughout history, we've had five great extinctions, right? One removed the dinosaurs, then you had this. You had also revolutions. You had the Industrial Revolution. You had the Intellectual Revolution. Before both of these, you had the Agricultural Revolution, where people learned to say plant seeds and get crops on their own. Before that, they were, you know, roaming in the forests and killing things and eating, right? Then they learned that they could say, same thing, this is a revolution. I could tell you very easily that no, this is very bad for us. It's very bad, we're getting information which we are not ready for. No, even if you're not ready for it, in a matter of about 10 years, you'll get learn, you'll learn to use it. Has there ever, the question for all of you is this, has there been ever a revolution? You have to think of revolution, agricultural revolution, where we learned how to plant our seeds and all that stuff. Then after the Industrial Revolution, where we learned machines and everything and mass producing things. Then Intellectual Revolution, so on and so forth. And now the Technological Revolution. Has there ever been a revolution? In the beginning, yeah, everybody goes mad. In Industrial Revolution, people said, now what do we do with farms and all these things? We have machines where we can dig the soil. What do we do with all the people? Now, the main thing that people talk about is artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence. Human life is human life. If we don't like artificial intelligence, we'll remove it. The movies are showing you, it's called a dystopian view. Dystopian is, it's a very dark, very scary view. There will never be a point on planet Earth where robots are running everything and we are sitting back as their victims or their servants. It's not going to happen. What will happen is, we will adapt to technology, we'll learn to use it. And in the beginning right now, it just came. I know when I got married 25 years ago, there were no cell phones. My wife was here in Hyderabad. I came here, arranged marriage, went back. I was in medical college. I was, you know, doing research, everything, working 38 hours, whatever, 32 hours. I had no sleep, whatever. So I had, cell phone was this big block. It was like a brick. It was very costly also. $1 per minute. Now, WhatsApp, look at how we're talking. I didn't have a laptop. Look at this. This is all technology. Are we blaming this? I'm able to see all your beautiful, handsome, smiling faces. We're connecting as human beings. None of us have ever met each other in real life, right? But we're getting a very good idea of who we are. That is technology. Some people will use technology for wrong purposes. They won't go far. They won't go far because the brain will get affected. Now, this is the danger in terms of technology and social media. People have forgotten. I had a young lady who came to me and she said, I have 4,000 friends. I'm getting married, 4,000 friends. After the marriage, she came to me. I said, so how was it? And she said, Guruji, you didn't come. I had 4,000 friends. All girls, what am I going to do there? She said, no, they're my Facebook friends. I don't know them. I said, okay. So the joke is that people have 8,000 Facebook friends, but nobody came to their funeral. Same point is, this is virtual reality. It's not reality. These are mega, these are pixels that put me into, you know, whatever, 1280 times 820 and projecting it to you. This is not Prashant. You are not limited or restricted to what I'm seeing here. The problem comes when I start believing that this is reality. You all are my friends. So I don't need to go to my neighbor and ask how he's feeling. I don't need to go and check on my classmates or my wife or my daughter. I don't need that because you're all my friends now and you're all budding doctors. So any health problem I have, I can drink, smoke, anything. All of you are there, you'll save me. You won't recognize me if I come in on a stretcher. Right? This is not reality. If you use it responsibly, and here is the difficult part, it's very difficult to use it responsibly because it just started. Think about how many of you had laptops when you're growing up. When I moved to India in 2010, I didn't know about Facebook. I was the last person to get Facebook actually. Now Facebook is old and Instagram and Snapchat, all these, I can't keep track of it. I feel very old. I never felt this old before. My point is this, use it to make yourself happy. Use it to fulfill some of your wants and desires, your needs, okay? But the minute you mistake it for reality, before I said use it to fulfill your needs, right? Let me take that back. Use it to entertain you. Use it to entertain you, that is why it's there. But if you use it to fulfill your needs, that will become an addiction. That becomes a dependence. Remember when Facebook first came out, the joke that every morning people get up and they see how many thumbs up they got. One of my students is a psychiatrist. He did an experiment. He's a young man. He set up an alternate ID and full photo and everything on Facebook. He wrote on his Facebook one day, just as an experiment, I am not going to be alive tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody. And one person gave him a thumbs up. Okay, God knows who did this. So next day he created a new avatar, as they call it, right? Picture of a young, pretty girl, you know, photos, this, that, everything like that. Within 1 week, he had almost 2,000, 3,000 friends. When he was really a young man, he had 30, 40 people who would maybe comment or whatever. 30, 40 friends. Young, pretty girl, he had all these people following him. And he wrote, tomorrow I will not be there. If my name is Prashant, he called himself Prashant in the same way. Overnight, he got hundreds of responses. Please tell me where you are. I will come and save you. Don't do this to yourself. I know you. I know your heart. I know your soul. It is a beautiful lesson in what people do, what we are like.
Yes, sir. We have evolved through many phases, agriculture, civilization, industrialization, and now we are in the technological phase. Basically, it is a simultaneous utopia and dystopia. The utopia, the good part, helps us move on to the next part. However, there's always the bad component, the dystopia. These days, I'll be focusing on social media in particular. Many people tend to trigger riots, fights, and create polarization in the society, creating a dystopian view in the people. These all things happen due to people spreading fake news or improperly sourced information, which part of the human psyche do the people or the perpetrators target when they resort to these tactics? And how do they know that the people will respond or react to these kind of tactics?
We human beings have very extreme views. I just need to find out. That's why it's called clickbait, right? Clickbait. Some extreme view, okay? Sadhguru exposed for the con man he is. Some people say, he didn't do anything wrong. They won't read it. Other people say, I want to find out what he did. Each thing. You know, Donald Trump, this, president of this, Prime Minister. We human beings have a need for excitement and action. So the more excited, it's called sensationalism. The more sensational title is for a video or a news article, the more likely you are to click on it. Lose 10 kgs overnight in 24 kilos. The only way to lose 10 kgs overnight is chop off your arms and your head. You'll be 10 kilos less, but you'll also be dead. But there are those articles. You all know it. There is video, YouTube also. Why do we respond to fake news? First of all, what is fake news? Fake news is it has no reality in, it has no basis in reality. Okay? But how do you know what is fake? There have been articles that came out that exposed politicians, movie actors, heroes, heroines and all that. And we call it fake news because it could not be proven. Human beings, we have this, you know, we have this itch to find out things that we should not know. What's the big, with complete respect for him and with the sensitivity towards the loss, Sushant Singh. What happened? You know, everyone has a different theory. Mafia was involved. He was depressed. Nobody really has answers. Unless we bring him back, we can't really find answers. The actual answer, whether it was Sridevi or it was whoever it was, Arushi, we have some, and that's what it is. If I'm a writer and I'm going to give you the answer, right? If I'm prepared to give you the answer, you'll read it. Even if you think I'm totally mad, this answer doesn't make any sense. If you think this answer doesn't make any sense, but at least it's something better than nothing. This is why we created sort of gods. Something better than nothing. A bad leader is better than no leader. Bad information is better than no information. Imagine you're driving down a road, okay, and you're trying to go to some hall. And you see a drunkard standing there. Okay, your GPS is not working. And he himself is spinning. So he's like a GPS, you know, satellite himself. And you say, Babu, which way is the hall, the temple, whatever? And he spins his finger around, he says, that way. Okay, he points to something. And the people in the car say, hey, why are you going in that direction? That guy's mad. Say, look, before we didn't know anything, right? Now at least he pointed to some direction. Let's take it and see. You never know. So that's what it is. It's fake news, sensational journalism, all this kind of stuff. It's written on the basis that the person who consumes it operates on the principle of you never know. You never know. Maybe it's true, and I'm going to be one of the first people to find it out. We never know reality completely. At this stage itself, right now, you know reality maybe about 2-3%. We don't understand reality. You ask Albert Einstein what reality is, he says, you can't see reality. Everything will be wavelengths of light. You know physics, it's reality is not as, you know, hard as this table or anything like that. It's everything is fluctuations of energy, electromagnetic wavelengths. So when someone puts an idea forward there, we are also those same fluctuations. And our brains, if you are very well occupied in your life, you are working hard in your medical studies, you have friends or no friends also, there is nothing wrong with being an introvert, with being shy and having very few friends. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's very likely you'll have a happier life. You'll have a happier life because you don't need other people. When they come, it's nice, but you don't need them. You won't look for them. Extroverts, they need people. So let's say you don't need people, you're working hard on something, you're studying. You don't need this kind of fake news. It doesn't do anything to you. But if you're looking for some masala, it'll give it to you. It's written for people who want lots of masala with no food underneath. It's just masala.
To prevent these sorts of information from reaching the audience, every social media platform has content moderators in place so that the audience will be saved from being exposed to these sort of inappropriate content. We'd like to know, What toll does this exposure to inappropriate content take place on the content moderator himself, and what sort of help do they need to recuperate from what happens to them?
Theoretically, let's say that I understand what content moderators do. Theoretically, hypothetically, what they do theoretically is everything that should not be seen by normal human beings, they are going to see it. We have beheadings, terrorism, rapes, raping of children, raping of babies, all kinds of things. We're talking about all kinds of social media, right? Content moderator, what would be his academic profile? It would not be a BTech, it would not be a MTech. He got the lowest rank in his BTech. He has some qualifications and he's going to get paid not very much. And for about 9 to 10 hours a day, he's going to look at brutal behavior. All different languages also, you have to understand. These people are there. There's one content, there'll be about 100 content moderators just for one language, Bangladesh. One for 100 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people for Marathi. 10,000 people for Spanish. 100,000 people for English. Goes on and on and on. It's the number one profession nowadays. So what happens when you keep on viewing really disturbing material? Two things happen. One, you become desensitized. When I show it to you, you will say, doesn't do anything to me. When you're before you took this job, when you drove on some flyover and you saw the there was an accident and a person was bleeding, what would you do? I would look, person bleeding and in the back of the car, I would look. I won't, it's not interesting, it's just I've never seen that before. So now what would you look? I don't care, it means nothing to me. So what happens is you become desensitized. The second thing that happens is it's called secondary trauma syndrome, which basically means, suppose I keep on showing you situations where you can't save the other person, okay? Even if there's an accident, car accident, you can get off your bike or your car and you can go and help the person. But if I show you situations of other people being tortured or hurt, you can't do anything to help them, right? So what happens is eventually your own cortisol levels, your adrenaline levels, norepinephrine, all these things, they increase to such a level where you just always feel helpless. You feel, remember we talked earlier about the post-traumatic stress disorder, right? The man who got shot. This is secondary trauma syndrome. It's not, you didn't get shot. You saw somebody else get shot every hour, every day, but you can't help them. You just have to swipe left, right, swipe, see whether the video is important or not. So it is a serious situation, but I can tell you that the companies that are doing that, they are doing a good service. And they have a lot of psychologists, counselors, everyone to provide stress breaks and, you know, support for the people who are doing those jobs. But it's not a job that you would want to do if you have a sensitive heart.
Yes, sir. Thanks for such an amazing and informative discussion. We'll call it a day for now and we'll meet you again in the next episode.